but I just never had the courage to go in. And there was a definite fear of giving up the secret that I worked so hard to maintain and keep. And as much as one part of me really wanted to experience the freedom of coming out, another part of me just couldn't let go of it.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So I am kind of at risk of getting very, very sentimental very, very quickly here. So if I do, I really don't mind if you press that button that skips ahead 30 seconds. I get it. We don't want emotions at this time of day, whatever time of day you are listening to this. But I just wanted to take the time to say that I'm really honored to do this job, and that sounds a bit silly, maybe, but every now and then when I am having these conversations and talking to people about their lives, I'm really struck by how open they are and how honest and how brave they are to share their story with me. And I think it's a real privilege that I get to help amplify these stories and get to really examine my own queerness and how that's shaped who I am. Yeah, okay, that's maybe a bit too sentimental. Let's just get on with what this show is about today. So this week I am joined by the British comedian Jacob Truman, who joined me to talk about a bar that was in the city that he went to university in, but which he never had the bravery to step foot in. So you already know, right? Like, before we even get into it, this one's going to be heavy, but it's a good one, I promise. We talk all about making all of your decisions from a position of fear, being too scared to come out to your identical twin brother, and what it's like glimpsing through that sliver of a window at a life that you aren't brave enough to start for yourself. Let's get into it. So, if I was a person from Lincoln,
yes,
how would I pronounce Lincoln?
Lincoln.
Oh, okay, so there's no exciting accent.
Yeah, apparently there is a Lincoln accent. I didn't really recognize it. To be fair, the people I was hanging around with were university students, most of which weren't actually from Lincoln, but it's not a very strong accent if there is one.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought it was going to be something like Lincoln.
Lincoln or something like that, yeah. Not quite, sadly not.
Well, anyway, you have just answered my second question, which was, what were you doing in Lincoln?
Yeah, I was at university from 2009 to 2012 at the University of Lincoln, studying media production. Served me well in my time since then. I've been using it sporadically, that wonderfully valuable degree.
I am sensing sarcasm.
Well detected.
So let's go back to 2009. Mm-hmm. You rock up in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Who were you at that point?
Oh, God. And the therapy begins. I was a very closeted young man, as closeted could be, really. I hadn't told anyone, in fact. Had I told anyone? No, I don't think I'd told anyone that I was gay at that point. So, yeah, really 100% closeted.
Had you told yourself?
Yes. Oh, I've told myself. I knew I was gay since I was about at least 12, could be as early as 11, 10, really.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you just carried all that around all that time?
Yeah, it was a very odd period of time because, like, In some ways, I wasn't a very outwardly, obviously gay kid. And because of that, it kind of insulated me from a lot of the sort of schoolyard homophobia that crops up. And there were gay kids who were a lot more obviously gay, and they received more stick than I got. Mm-hmm. I was just a generally kind of nerdy, weird kid, and my homosexuality was very, very, very secret. So if I was getting any teasing, it was just for being a little dork and not necessarily for being a gay kid. But inside my head and my own sort of awareness of who I was and who I was becoming, very, very aware that I was gay. I'd accepted it about myself years and years before, but I had a real tough time figuring out how to tell other people. And I was closeted, very closeted, 100% closeted going into university.
Wow. So this isn't me feeling sorry for people who weren't bullied.
Mm.
But it's going to come across as that. Because I was bullied for being outwardly like gay and people like recognizing that in me. But that forced me to confront it earlier because it's like, oh, what did they mean by this? And also it made it easier for me to come out. So I can kind of see that for people who are not having the world shit on them, it can make things difficult.
Oh, I was getting shit on. I was getting shit on just not for being gay. I went to a school which was in the East Midlands of England. It wasn't the most progressive of places. And I could go into some really grim detail about that if you really want to. It just wasn't. It was a very right-wing conservative part of the UK. Yeah. And was obviously a motivating factor as to why I wasn't coming out at that time in my life. Mm. The kids at school picked on me and my brother because we were small. We were scrawny, we were nerdy, and we were both identical twins. So that's just an extra level of shit that people like to sling at us.
I love how you qualified that, though. We were both identical twins.
Oh, yeah. You need to make sure, yeah. I was an identical twin with him, but him not with me. But no, we got bullied. We got picked on and teased pretty much constantly. And it was, you know, there were levels where it was just sort of like ambient teasing that wasn't too bad. And then there were times and periods where it was really quite intense and unfortunate, and you know, teachers and school officials had to be called and stuff like that. We were picked on, definitely. It's just my gayness.
How dorky were you?
Well, I was a gifted child. I was in some of the sort of like summer school programs for gifted children. For the audio listeners, I'm doing the little air quotes thing upon gifted, and I was all right at school. I was able to sit and follow instructions fairly well compared to a lot of other kids. And it just made me a bit of a target for that kind of bully who would pick on somebody.
Wait. Is gifted smart or gifted not smart?
Smart.
Oh, okay.
But here's the thing. I was in school and I was kept being put in these sort of gifted programs. There was a gifted summer school I went to, and there was a few other things, small things, and I thought that I was like, oh my god, am I the next Stephen Hawking of my generation? No, big fish in a small pond. We were just sort of generally we were small, scrawny, dorky, and we were easy pickings for these kind of bullies that saw any kind of difference or deviation from the norm as a legitimate target for their ire. But for me, bringing it back round, it was not to do with being gay, because I was like properly ironclad closeted, definitely not out in any way, shape or form. And me in general, but also consciously making sure that I wasn't presenting that very obviously outwardly, because I knew there was no way on earth I was going to come out in school. It was, what would be the point? It would make my life horrible. And I just needed to leave school and get to a point where I could be around people who were more like me, or at least open-minded. Coming out in school was not a possibility at all. So, like I said, ironclad closeted.
And so was that the plan then? Was it like, when I get to university, the doors are coming off?
I think that was sort of like the prospective plan, but not to bury the lead, I didn't actually fully come out until after university. I started coming out.
Well, how long was it? 3 years?
Yeah. This is going to sort of like become clear that the sort of journey that I took was very sort of slow and stymied in comparison to a lot of people. And, you know, everyone's journey is everyone's journey, but I very much felt like I was not making a lot of progress in that regard. It took me a long time to muster up the courage and the sort of emotional will to do that. The first person I came out to, well, this is actually a funny story. I knew I needed to tell somebody. I must have been 19, 20. Again, ironclad closeted, completely closeted. And I knew I had to tell somebody. And I'd been talking to some people online, just sort of like as part of the sort of online communities that I was part of. People who I knew were very, very progressive and open and pro-LGBT rights. And there was one online friend I had in particular who, well, I thought to myself, I should probably come out to my brother first. But then I thought, no, that's too big. That's too significant. So I decided to tell this person on the other side of the world. They live in, I think they were living in Kentucky at the time, or perhaps...
Famously liberal.
Yeah. But they were very liberal. And I sent an email, and I think it was literally Christmas Eve. It might have been Christmas Eve. God, the drama of it. Woke up Christmas morning wondering what was going to happen. And I just got a message back saying, that's cool, no issues, not a problem with me. I later found out that they actually weren't the person I officially came out to, because they were in the car driving and had asked their partner at the time to read out their emails. So the first person that I technically came out to is some random guy from America whose name I know, but I know nothing else about them. Which is quite interesting, I suppose.
So before we go any further, What was the content of the email? Were there bullet points?
No, it was something, it was short and sweet, but requisitely dramatic. I think it was something like...
Was the subject line, something I have to tell you?
It could have been, yeah, it could have been. And it was something like, dear, I'll use a separate name. Dear Billy, I have something to tell you that I want to say before this year is over. I'm gay. Lots of love, Jacob. And it was pretty succinct, pretty standard. And I really was not expecting a bad reaction. So as low stakes as there could possibly be for the very first person I could tell. And the reaction was exactly what I thought. And then for months and months and months, they were really the only person who knew. And I started to sort of build up the courage to tell my brother, who I was at university with, which was interesting.
It is interesting. Okay, so when you say twins, I just assume, they must be really close.
Mm-hmm. We are. I mean, there are twins, identical twins that aren't. In our secondary school, there were another set of identical twins who, I don't know if they disliked each other, but they just didn't hang out. They weren't really friends. Yeah. We were quite close. Me and my brother have a pretty similar sense of humor. Growing up, the way we entertained ourselves was just by trying to make each other laugh. So we had a pretty close connection, still do. So we ended up going to the same university and we're spending a lot of time with each other. And yeah, the months and months passed and I actually went to therapy. Was this before or after? I think it might have been after. But I eventually ended up going to therapy specifically because I was having so much trouble coming out to people. And I think I'd managed to tell this person from my online world that I was interacting with. And then my brother. And then it kind of stalled. And I was still really struggling to tell people. I didn't come out in one big go to the family. I didn't do it like that. I was very sort of like selective at the start, at the beginning.
And what was the response from your brother?
Okay, let me set the scene. I'd been sort of building myself up to tell him for a long time, years perhaps in the making it was. And whenever he'd ask me, you know, the sort of women that I was interested in, I would always, you know, lie, obviously. I had a few stock responses, a few actresses I would mention. It was all very rehearsed. I was building up my energy and my sort of wherewithal and courage to tell my brother. We went to a pub that we went to frequently in Lincoln, and we sat down at a table. We were having the usual talk, and I wasn't planning on telling him, but he was needling me about girls and women and stuff like that. And at one point I just went, oh, for God's sake, Mike, I'm gay, like that. And he went, ha ha ha, and went off to the bar thinking it was some kind of joke. And I thought, no, I'm going to, let's double down now. And when he came back, I went, no, I wasn't kidding. I'm being serious. And he was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And then he questioned how he'd never been able to figure it out for weeks and weeks after. And it was pretty... I didn't have any problems or pushback from my brother. That was pretty smooth. It went as well as I could have hoped it could have gone. But yeah, I was still very much after that. I felt that it wasn't like the weight had been lifted and I had all this steam to carry me through to come out to more people. yeah, I still really struggled with my ability to do that. And eventually, like I said, I went to therapy specifically. The university had free therapy sessions, and I specifically went and accessed it and sat down with this for a preliminary chat with this therapist in a therapy room that had loads of figurines of men and women embracing each other. And I was like, this is stupid. But I went into this therapy session and he asked what he could do for me. And because he was a stranger, it wasn't as difficult. And I knew that there was some, you know, confidentiality. I just straight up said, well, I'm gay and I really struggle with coming out and I can't seem to do it. And he was like, okay. And I could see on his face that he had no idea how to respond to that, no experience with it. And I ended up having some sessions with a therapist that ended up not really even being about my inability to come out and were more about sort of self-confidence and self-esteem. I don't think the therapists at Lincoln University were well equipped to deal with closeted kids being like, can you help? Can you help me come out, please? I don't think it was very, very easy for them to respond to that, which is fair enough.
And so just picking up on that then, do you think that there was a link between your fear of coming out and your self-esteem, and that's how you landed on that as something to work through, or was it just them panicking?
It's a very insightful comment, but I don't think so. I think any self-esteem issues that I had or have...
Yeah, they don't go away. Spoiler alert.
They never do. I dealt with any feelings of uneasiness that I would have for my homosexuality years before. I got to a point where I think at about 15, 16, in my head, secretly, I was very militant. I was like, hell yeah, I'm gay. And it's the world's problem, not me. But don't tell anyone. Yeah. It was so stupid. But regardless, that was the situation I was in. And the therapist didn't really know how to deal with it. I got a little bit of help. I got some terms I can use to sort of describe the situation I was in. So that was fantastic.
What were the terms? Like buggery?
Oh, I can't remember. Okay. Yeah, stuff like that. Like, but it wasn't super helpful. I ended up just having to sort of keep going and come out to people bit by bit. I think after that, I might have told some more online people. And then my sister, which was interesting because I came out to her immediately after she beat me at a game of table tennis. I just thought, fuck it. This is the moment.
Oh, did she go easy on you in subsequent games?
No, it was really odd. Again, another example of me trying to build up my courage to tell more people. And I was like, I'll tell Holly. Holly, my sister Holly, won't be an asshole about it. And there were times when I'd like stood outside her door and been trying to knock on the door and not been able to do it. I know, it's like a little film, isn't it? But then we were playing ping pong one day. And I thought, you know, we're getting on, we're casual, we're having fun, summer holidays or whatever. Just tell her. And I did. And she was like, what? What? Okay, that makes sense. Which was, I just kind of dropped it on her. It's a really odd time, which seems to be my sort of my MO. I would just tell people in a fit of pique or something.
When is the right time?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I told my mum, which was after university, we're skipping forward a little bit here, but... Mm. When I told my mum I was living in London, I'd moved to London, and my mum and my sister came to visit me and my brother in London, and we went to a restaurant. And at that point, I kind of more being a bit more open and I was coming out to more people, but I hadn't told a lot of my family. And she was asking me questions about it. And I was like, mum, stop asking questions. For God's sake, I'm gay. And again, the reaction that I got from her was exactly what I wanted, which was, oh, okay. And much like my brother and my sister, I didn't want a big fanfare. I didn't want, you know, tears or anything like that. I wanted it to be over and done with. And luckily they were as sober as you could possibly be about it, which was good. No issues there. But rewinding, for some reason, I just continued to have real struggles with doing it again and again and again.
So if I can just interject there. Mm-hmm. In most of the scenarios, most of the examples that you've given when you're talking about coming out to people, you've said, I was fairly sure that they would be okay with it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem as though there was a fear of rejection.
Not
from you.
No. My family is pretty broadly liberal with these type of issues. I wasn't rationally thinking that I was going to be kicked out or rejected. I guess emotionally, it was a big secret that I'd kept for years and years and years and had done a lot of work keeping secret, and relinquishing that freely felt like a massive emotional toll. And having to have essentially not a new, whole new understanding of our relationship, but telling somebody something quite sensitive and personal about myself, even to my family, was still very difficult. And it's not like it isn't difficult for other queer people. I encounter gay people that are like, yeah, I got to about 14 and I told my mom, and I was like, how did you do that? It was inconceivable to me that I would have come out at that stage in my life.
So is it like a fear of inconveniencing people?
No, it probably is a fear of rejection, just not on a rational level. I think it was an emotional sort of fear. I mean, to give a sort of crass allegory, I have a fear of flying, and I know rationally that flying isn't particularly unsafe, but emotionally, hurtling through the air at hundreds of kilometers an hour in a big metal tube with some wings on it terrifies me. And so I think that's sort of similar sort of situation. I had no real expectation that my family would reject me. Emotionally, it was still a huge, huge leap. It really weighed on me. I remember having panic attacks. When I was a young child, when I was like 14, 15, I would sit. I would go into my downstairs bathroom, and there was a cupboard under the stairs that I would go into, and I would sit on top of the Hoover, close the doors, and just weep, because it was just so upsetting that I was having, feeling like I couldn't tell anyone and that I didn't want anyone to know, because there's a modicum of a possibility that there would be rad reactions. I don't know. I don't know how to answer it more fully than that. I rationally knew that my family were probably almost certainly not going to be have an issue with it, but it still took so much emotional effort to do it.
And so why did you sit on the Hoover?
It was like a little Henry Hoover thing that I could confidently sit on. It added to the sort of the mystique of the time.
Yeah, interesting choice.
Yeah.
Well, and so then if we go back to 2009, going to university, being like, yay, I'm going to come out, and then not quite taking that leap.
What was Shall that? Shall I elaborate?
No, just like, were you doing anything clandestinely?
Oh, God, not really. There were a few times when I thought about perhaps maybe considering secretly attending some of these like LGBT clubs and stuff, but I shot them down pretty quickly because I thought, you know, I couldn't go around the room and be like, by the way, don't tell anyone.
You could have worn a bag over your head.
Yeah, I could have. Yeah, it would have been a possibility. Yeah, that would have been nice. This leads us on to sort of the lost space that I sort of am offering up for this for this episode, because in my second and third years, I was living on a street in a house, in a house share with some other people. And I'm not kidding, maybe 2 minutes walk away from my front door was a gay bar called Christopher's. And I walked past it, I can't tell you how many times, and I never went in. I walked past it, looking through the windows, looking through the curtains, hearing the music. Sometimes I would stand and slow down and try and, I don't know, imbibe as much of the energy as
absorb.
I could.
Absorb.
Yeah, before I walked off. I think maybe a couple of occasions I might have actually stopped and tried to see what was happening inside, but I just never had the courage to go in. And there was a definite fear of giving up the secret that I worked so hard to maintain and keep. And as much as one part of me really wanted to experience the freedom of coming out, another part of me just couldn't let go of it. And to this day, having been to therapists and talked about this and not really feeling as though we really got to the core of it, I don't really know why that is. I guess if I was speculating, it would be because me and my brother were picked on and teased. And like I said, sometimes it was fairly just sort of average schoolyard stuff, and sometimes it was really intense. Yeah. And it just made me a fearful person. And perhaps other kids, other queer kids, have the courage to do that earlier on, and I applaud them, and I think that's wonderful. I just didn't have it in me until I was a fully fledged adult, really. And so, yeah.
Okay. So the second year university, you move into this share house with a bunch of other students. First of all, what was the ratio of people to toilets?
Oh, there was four of us. There was two toilets. And one of the people...
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. One of the people who I lived with was barely ever there. She lived with her boyfriend most of the time. I think I literally think I saw her twice in the entire first year that she was living there. So, yeah, that wasn't too bad.
So as share houses go, it's not too bad.
There are worse situations, yeah.
Did you know about Christopher's before you'd moved there?
No. Well, I knew about Christopher's before I moved into that house. When I moved to Lincoln, I didn't know about it. And I had obviously been walking around Lincoln and realized it was there and was like, oh, a gay bar. Interesting. Sadly, nothing ever came of it.
So did the fact that Christopher's was there inspire you to move into that flat?
No, absolutely not. It was, well, I was looking for somewhere to stay and I was running out of options. And someone who I lived with in the first year in the halls of residence for the university, they helped me out and gave me a room because someone had dropped out from their house share. And it worked out pretty well. But it was just happenstance that we happened to be located so close to Christopher's. And I was constantly walking past it on my way home from jobs or university. And I never, not once, went in.
Okay. So help me understand then. Let's imagine you're walking past Christopher's.
Yeah.
You're on your way home from a long day at work. Can you see in?
No. There are sort of curtains in the windows. But... you can sometimes, if they haven't closed them 100% properly, you can get a slither of a view of the inside. It's pretty small and pokey. It's not a big city gay bar. And there were frequently times when I would walk past it and there would be loud music and people laughing and clearly people having a good time in there. There were times when I would go past at night and there would be a bouncer outside and people maybe having a smoke or in line. And I would just walk past with my head down. Literally, I would walk past it and look around to see if other people were around there. And if there were other people there, I wouldn't slow down. I wouldn't stop or have a look inside.
So on those times when you did slow down, how long would it be safe enough to linger?
Seconds. I wouldn't feel comfortable going for too long. I would slow down or stop, look inside for a few seconds to see if I could see anything, and then scurry away like the frightened little clustered gay boy that I was.
Wow.
And then sit at home.
What are the feelings in those moments?
God. They weren't good feelings. It's obviously sadness, FOMO, both on a sort of general, oh, I wish I was having fun, and also I wish I was having gay fun sort of basis.
That's a whole other level of fun, yeah.
Absolutely. Very sort of like fearful. I remember when I was walking past Christopher's, I would first check to see if there was anyone else in the general vicinity or on the other side of the road. If there wasn't, I would slow down and walk past and see if I could get a peek or maybe stop and listen to what I could hear. And I remember just feeling not only physically apart from everything, but very emotionally and mentally apart from what I could see constituted the gay community in Lincoln and the gay community at large. So it's sadness, it's isolation, it's feeling remote, but just not having the courage and the mental might to push past the barrier and actually do stuff that would enable me to go to somewhere like Christopher's. And I didn't have that until after I left university. And even I remember immediately after I graduated thinking, wow, you've really messed up. This is a time for you to really... You could have had so many good nights. You could have met some people and you just didn't have the balls to do it. And I was like, okay, cool. Moving on. Next phase of my life. Yeah.
And so having that realization, did you then do anything to immediately remedy that?
After I left university, my brother and I tried to stay in Lincoln just to see if we could make a go of living in Lincoln, if that's something we wanted to do. We were there for a few months before we realized absolutely not. I've always been somebody who loves big cities. So London was an obvious choice. A lot of other people who had graduated the year before me were already down in London. And people who I was friends with were trying to make that happen. And London just felt like sort of the place to go. And as I say, as someone who likes large settlements, big cities, it made sense. And I was excited to go. To do that, I had to spend a lot of time working crap jobs to save up money to move to London. When I first moved to London, for the first month, I lived in someone's flat in Limehouse, which is quite an odd part of London, really. And as soon as I got my room there, I immediately started downloading certain apps and making connections and having conversations with people in a way that I absolutely had never done before. And that was really properly the beginning of my actual gay life. Prior to that, I'd come out to a few people. I'd come out to some people I knew online. I'd come out to my brother and my sister. But moving to London is where gay life began for me.
Okay, so I still want to talk about Christopher's, but before we go back there, can we have a moment to cringe over the profile picture you chose on this app or multiple apps and what it said in your bio?
Oh, I don't really remember. I know it was definitely something like Midlander freshly in London, something like that.
Anyone want to show me around?
Yeah, it was something like that. It wasn't like I got there and I was immediately like, looking for anal. It wasn't like that.
Who wants to do pee?
Exactly. But yeah, I think I moved in to this room the first day of this month of living there. And I was immediately like, let's download these apps. Let's see what we can do here. Genuinely, that was some of the more happy times of my sort of my journey. It felt like I was actually starting to make connections.
Okay, but did you put a picture of yourself on your profile, or was it some kind of sunset or a hill or something?
It was my face. I was in London and I felt far enough away from the sort of epicenter of my life up until that point that I felt like I wasn't going to get recognized. Also, curiously, I felt a little bit more confident about it because any gay people that I may have known at that time were probably on apps like Grindr, and I was very specifically on Growler, which is a much smaller, more niche app. And I didn't really...
How much research did you do?
Oh, I got on... I think I downloaded Grindr and I was on it for like 2 hours and I was like, no, this is not for me. And then I realized that... it's probably not catering to my tastes in terms of men. I generally prefer a burlier, hairier gent. And
does he have to be a gent or can he just be a man?
Oh, he can be anything as long as he's burly and hairy. He can be a pirate, I don't care. So I did a little bit of research into the different apps. I found things like Scruff and stuff like that. But then I was like, no, let's go on Growler. This seems to be my sort of interest. It's where the wind is blowing, the direction the wind is blowing for me sexually. And I got on, I uploaded a photo of myself, very short little intro that was pretty innocent for the most part. And that is where I started to get messages from gay people, gay men.
And then London ruined you.
Yep. That's when it happened. And that was when I genuinely felt like I was starting to maybe just slightly dip my toe in the very beginnings of my actual gay life.
Okay, yeah, I do definitely want to go back to Christopher's, but do you remember the first person you met off Growler?
Yes. Do you want to hear the story?
Yeah.
I don't know how interesting it is, but it was a very much older gentleman who was very, let's say...
Wait,
very
I need specifics. How much is very much older?
Ooh. Well, if I was about 23, 24, probably about 30 years older.
Okay.
And I know that seems like it could have been a sort of more exploitative sort of relationship, but...
No, you were 23.
Yeah, I knew myself. I felt like I was able to sort of navigate that pretty well. More than anything, I was just trying to sort of meet people and talk to people. It wasn't an immediate sort of like, let's hook up sort of a situation, although that wasn't... not on the cards.
You've got to wash your bits just to be sure.
Yeah, you have to. You know, it's courtesy, isn't it? And we met up in, I think this will actually be the first gay bar I actually went to, was the King's Arms in Soho. Ooh. And I literally went in, it was the middle of the day, it wasn't that late, and he was sat there and we just talked. It was pretty innocent. I was like, at some point, yeah, I've got to get home now. He walked me to the tube. We went as far as... the tube would take us.
He walked you to the tube.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, in retrospect, you can construe it as like a gentlemanly thing to do
Or he was being opportunistic.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I remember that when we left, I gave him a hug and he sort of kissed me on the cheek and squeezed my bum. And I was like, okay, cool. And I stepped off the tube and I was like, oh my God, this is happening so quickly. It really wasn't. But that was the first time I met another gay person specifically to be like, oh, you're a gay person? I'm a gay person too. And it was very much very well into my 20s. So it gives you an idea of how stymied and stifled my progress was. And at least from my perspective.
But how light were you in your loafers in the days following that interaction?
It energized me in a way, but I think part of it is that because I was doing this in my early 20s, as opposed to, you know, 16, 17 or even earlier, I felt like I had a sort of a good head on my shoulders and I wasn't going to get absolutely enveloped by some seedy London underworld.
But did you feel a certain level of shame that it was later than you perceived should have been the time you were exploring? Or did you feel like, I've got to do this really quickly because I've wasted all this time?
I think both of those are very true. I kind of make a dichotomy between the rational side of me that can be a bit more kind and like, you know, not everyone progresses the same way. It's a marathon, not a sprint, blah, blah, blah. At the same time, I was coming out a lot later than I think a lot of other gay people did. And I felt a need to make up for time. And I wanted to...
suck some dick.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a big part of it. Like, that's not a part of it. I wanted to go out and, you know, have some fun. And it was enough for me to just meet this person and just meet another gay person and feel... okay, that happened. We've progressed onwards. But I think afterwards I felt like progress had been made, but at the same time, kind of sadness that it was still taking this long and it was still taking as much emotional effort as it was.
Oh, we're so horrible to ourselves, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, the world is horrible to us, unfortunately.
Well, that is not a good reason to be horrible to yourself, though, is it?
I know. Sorry. And yet.
I don't know why I'm telling you off. I'm like a total hypocrite. So let's go back to this time, Christopher's. You said before, and I scribbled it down, that your experiences in childhood made you a fearful person. Mm-hmm. Do you think you are still a fearful person?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a central part of who I am, and at least the negative parts of it. I'm a very anxious person, which is weird because I do stand-up comedy. Like, I get on a stage and I try and I'm trying to make people laugh and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm very much governed by fear. I have a fear of flying, which is something I didn't have as a kid. And then I grew up and became a little bit more globally conscious and aware of things that were happening at the time. And any kind of major trip I went on, I was scared to go to new places and stuff like that. This is parts of my personality that I've had to really work on and chip away at and sort of remove a lot of the fear, because it's always there. It's never not there. I'm a very anxious person in general in many contexts. There are obviously times when I'm very comfortable and easy and relaxed, but with a lot of new experiences, I'm just naturally nervous about them. And I have to force myself to overcome that. And it's a conscious thing.
How come you weren't nervous about talking to me?
This is such a weird thing, isn't it, about anxiety?
I'm really rational. Threatening and imposing. I don't know why this wouldn't be something that filled you with fear.
I'm happy to talk about myself. That's the issue. You know, some people, you know, when I do stand-up, they'll say, God, I could never do that in a million years. And it's something that scares me, but it's something I at least have some kind of compulsion to do.
But there's something about you being in control. Mm-hmm. There, right? Like when you're on stage, you're the one calling the shots. And so there is less of that. Like you're controlling that environment.
Mm-hmm. In some sense. I mean, I don't always feel in control when I'm on stage. I'm still very much learning. I'm growing and sort of developing my skills in that regard. But yeah, that's a very astute observation. It is about control. That's probably why I had such a tough time coming out, is because I felt like I was letting something out of my hands. I was releasing something into the world in a way that I wouldn't be able to strictly control with my own oversight. It would be something that other people could talk about to other people and other people could learn about, and it would be out of my control. That's Absolutely a massive part of it.
Sorry, lots resonating. So just thinking about that. If we talk about Christopher's now, because I keep saying, let's talk about Christopher's, and then I'm like, let's talk about something else. Mm. Let's imagine that the year is 2010 and you have the opportunity to go in. You're standing outside and you've paused to look through the sliver in the window or the sliver in the front door, and you actually say to yourself, do you know what? I'm just going to go in. What does that feel like?
It would be the usual with me: fear, anxiety, racing heartbeat. I imagine there would be some level of excitement in amongst it. And also there would be that constant rational part of my brain saying, this is fine. There's nothing wrong with this. You're not doing anything wrong. It's literally just a bar. Lots of people go to bars. It's fine. Go in, buy a drink. It won't be an issue. But I know for a fact, because I didn't ever go in, because I didn't dare to, that it would have been a very emotionally difficult and prickly moment for me.
And so as yourself, as the you of today, mm-hmm. what advice would you give that version of you?
Is there any advice I could give to that version of me that version of me would take?
You could slap him.
I could do that. I don't know if I could have told myself anything that would convince me to go in. Because like I said, the rational part of my brain was aware that, you know, this is something normal people do, and, you know, I'd have to come out eventually. But it was that fear of letting go of the control I had over my own story and my own secret. And if there was someone in there that saw me, that would be traumatic, wouldn't it? Well, would it? Would it be? Well, yes, of course it would be. It would be horrible. Then they'd know. Would that be a problem? Yes, is how I would respond. That's me being honest.
But this is where the slapping comes in.
Yeah.
Do you have compassion for him?
Absolutely. I wish I could go back and hug that version of me and say, you know, maybe you'll make progress slower than other people, but you will make progress. I wish I could tell them that it will be okay. I wish I could tell them that your family won't really care and it won't be an issue, at least for your immediate loved ones. I wish I could tell them that, but I can't. And I feel sorry for that kid, because I know that a big part of me definitely wanted to go in and make these connections sooner rather than later. And I just couldn't do it. And I struggled with it so, so much. You know, there are people who don't come out until they are in their 40s and 50s. There are probably people who were gay and never came out. And the fear of being that person is probably what motivated me to actually genuinely coming out eventually. Mm. But at that point in my life, I was still so controlled by fear and not being able to direct my own narrative outwardly to the world and wondering what other people would think. And I rehearsed, like, not comebacks per se, but if someone like was asking me questions or interrogating me about it, what would I say? How would I obfuscate it? How would I embrace it and be, you know, fuck you, gay and proud about it? But it wasn't something that was ever realized in university, because I just had so much fear. It's genuinely not something I talk about very often. This is a very rare example of me being quite open about it. I was governed by fear, and I still am in certain areas of my life. But thank God that I've managed to progress quite significantly since then. And I do have compassion for that kid, Sailor V.
Thank you for being so honest.
I was very much aware that when I got this email, I was like, oh, you're going to be talking about some intense feelings and some parts of your life that you don't really talk about.
Oh, this bitch is going to want to know how I feel.
But I was happy to do so. I saw it as an opportunity. This is genuinely, this is actually part of that process.
Oh, so this is just you skipping therapy for a week and coming basically, and getting free.
Basically. And I'm very happy to have that opportunity. Thank you for giving that to me.
Do you have any memories of Christopher's, or maybe clubbing from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, I would love to hear all about it, so why not get in touch? I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I cannot do that alone. Go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then why not tell me all about what it is you got up to? You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Jacob by following him on Instagram or TikTok, where his handle is at Jacob Truman. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform of choice, or just tell other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. My name is Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.